powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
You know, Jake, I kept calling it a wild, wild card weekend. On Friday, we kept saying it's a wild, wild card weekend. You got so many games, so much up in the air. What's going to happen? Yeah, turns out just one wild card team actually advanced, and really only two games were that close at all. You had the Bengals getting a win, their first, by the way, in 31 years, their first playoff win, over the Raiders, 26-19, a controversial ending to that one. A controversial ending as well to the 49ers win over the Cowboys, 49ers being the only wild card team to win over the weekend, 23-17.
Boy,
that's pending the Cardinals'
brutal
outcome against the Rams. By the way, that game is tonight. Cardinals, obviously, the wild card team there. But otherwise, you had Chiefs, 42-21 over the Steelers. Bills completely dominate the Patriots, 47-17, embarrass New England. And then the Bucs get out a pretty comfortable win, 31-15. Brady probably could have come out of the game much sooner than he did. I mean, that was none of those were particularly close. Cool moments in all of them, but none were especially close.
Yeah, they really weren't, and it was dominated to me by, you know, really the top seeds, and they showed that they belonged, right? That this wasn't something that, you know, they had good play or regular season performances and just weren't ready to show up for the playoffs. I mean, there is a clear divide between the have and the have-nots in the NFL, and that was on full display, in my opinion, Stacey, and a big part of it came down to something that we talked about, you know, at length going into this weekend, which was the theme of really the mark of really good teams, which is great quarterback play, first and foremost. Number two, great offensive line play in the trenches, being able to dominate and own the line of scrimmage from a run game perspective, from a pass blocking perspective, giving those quarterbacks plenty of time to work. And then finally, and not least by any stretch, great defenses, great defensive play, and timely turnovers in critical moments. And that, to me, was the difference in a lot of these games. As you look at Tampa Bay and them consistently putting the pressure on Philly to the point where you looked at the way that they played offensively, Stacey, they looked scared. They looked scared to just have a five-step drop-back concept to try and push the ball down the field at all. And, you know, Pittsburgh, obviously with Ben Roethlisberger, you know, struggling to push the ball down the field on a consistent basis. But Kansas City really able to get after him at times. And obviously Buffalo, wow, what Buffalo did to New England was just something that I don't think any of us were expecting.
No, Buffalo scored on all seven drives that didn't end with a kneel down. That means no punts. It means no field. It means
it was a perfect game.
It was the perfect offensive game. Well, that's exactly why, Jake, when obviously you bring it back to Seattle, if my question is, are the Seahawks good enough to be a playoff team, and are the Seahawks good enough to win a Super Bowl, if it was in this year's playoffs, my answers are yes and no. Like, watching the lower seeds, watching I mean, the Raiders were the best lower seed, but the Eagles looked like it could have been any other team in there. The Patriots had the number two defense in the league in terms of limiting yards, but the talent gap between Mac Jones and Josh Allen was just immediately very obvious. The Seahawks, talent-wise, what they could potentially do,
yeah,
I don't think is worse than either of those teams. However, you look at some of the top teams, if you look at the Bills, you look at what the Bucs did, winning pretty comfortably. The Chiefs, when even if they had mistakes, including a fumble recovery for a touchdown, it doesn't matter. They ran all over the Steelers. Those top teams, the top seeds, we'll see what the Rams do today and obviously what the Titans and Packers look like next week. No, I don't think the Seahawks are ready to compete on that level. I think there's still a couple important pieces away.
Well, they are, you know, here's Pete Carroll talking about it by the end of the season, and I think that that also skews the answer, in my opinion, a little bit here, Stacey. Cut number eight, here's what Pete Carroll had to say.
We were able to see the team that we can become and over the course of this year, and we didn't get other things done, but we did see that. I told them today, like I remember telling Cam and Sherm and those guys when they were in here years ago, that this is in this room right now is the nucleus of a championship team that we'll add to and you know, we'll bring in support, but the guys in this room are the guys that are going to make this happen.
So there's that side of it, going to the end of the game or the end of the season, the last two games remaining, and how fun that was to watch how well they played together, specifically on offense, and the offensive explosion that we witnessed. In cut number nine, you know, Pete Carroll being more specific as to, you know, what he thought that this team could have done in the playoffs.
I think it's right there. I mean, I wouldn't want to play us right now, you know, if I was another team. I think we have the elements that make you really dangerous, that you can't pinpoint where you got to stop us, you know, and defense is playing well enough and kicking game is good enough. And when you have that foundation of the run game, then it's a tough formula. It's always been, you know, we've been playing like that for years. And so, yeah, we have a ton of stuff to look forward to with this team and the players that are making up the nucleus of it. And I think it's really an exciting time for us. And I'm really pleased that we finished with a real clear illustration of who we are.
Now, I don't disagree with a single thing that Pete Carroll said right there. With the right matchup in the playoffs, and Stacey, I think that this is what you're pointing to specifically. With the right matchup in the playoffs, you're talking about the Raiders, the Steelers, maybe even insert them in that San Francisco-Dallas game. They've got a chance. They've got a chance to really compete and make some waves when it comes to that first round. But after that, when it comes to the haves and the have-nots, the Seahawks aren't at that level. They aren't. Even with them playing as well as they did the last 2 weeks, they aren't on the same level as the Bills, as Kansas City. And I would even say Green Bay, Tampa Bay, even though we didn't get to see Green Bay on the first round of the because they had the first round bye. But to me, there's a clear difference between being a playoff team and then being a championship caliber team, and that's where they fall short.
Well, and that's really, that's probably how it is every year when you look back, the difference being that in 2013, Seattle, and in 14, Seattle was that team. Like, Seattle was the team that so clearly you looked at and you were like, oh, they're just better. They're just genuinely better than everyone else. They could be any team, whereas some of these other teams, it's like, if there's a favorable matchup, yeah. Or if they get their absolute best. If Seattle has its game that it had against the Cardinals where Rashad Penny gets 190 yards and Russell Wilson has a clean day and the defense limits points, yeah, that team can hang with almost anyone. But is that team something that you're going to see week in and week out? Like, I don't know. I genuinely don't know. I'm going to guess no in terms of 190 yards a game for Rashad Penny. I'm going to safely say that's not going to happen.
Go out on a limb.
Going to go out on a limb and say that's not going to happen. But, like, is that offensive line performance over the last, let's say, 5 weeks something that we will see when the year starts throughout the season? I don't know. And I don't even know if they're going to have a shot to, since they've got three starters hitting free agency that they got to figure out. But in terms of, like, where they have to take a step forward, it's hard to figure out a path that looks like the ones that those top seeds have taken, right? Like Kansas City. Okay, they have Patrick Mahomes. You can't replicate that. He's a very unique and uniquely talented quarterback.
Like, well, and they have a unique system.
They have a unique system. They have if not one, then both of the fastest players in the NFL. They have the best receiving tight end in the NFL. They have a head coach that is widely regarded as one of the most brilliant in the NFL, and a head coach that, while he has his flaws, is both he and Patrick Mahomes on a team and in a system where they can almost eliminate those because of all the other offensive weapons they have. Right? Like, you look at the Bills, like, they have some explosive weapons on offense, a great defense. Theirs is maybe the most I don't want to say you can replicate it. Like, it's really, really hard to do. It's not like you could look at it as a blueprint and be like, do that. But, like, they don't have
In theory, you have a talented quarterback. You have an explosive offense, right?
Right.
And you have one of the best defenses in football. So, in theory,
they don't have, like, a Derrick
Henry.
That's
what they want. But it's not the style of offense that Pete Carroll wants. It's not the style of offense that the Seattle Seahawks are going to run going into this thing, where they're just going to give the ball to you know, Russell Wilson or the Bills. They give it to Josh Allen, you know, 37, 40 times a game, and say, hey, go make plays, go run around, go, you know, make it happen with your arm. That's just not the style in which the Seahawks are going to play. But in theory, you know, both sides complement each other. Both sides are able to be some of the best in football.
But I get that that's not the style that Seattle's going to play, because Russell Wilson is a very different quarterback than Josh Allen. Josh Allen, he's mobile, but he's got a huge arm, and he's still young and can still escape pressure in a way that Russell Wilson can, but maybe can't as well as he used to when he was 25 as opposed to, like, 33. And
well, he's like a running back. He's like 250
well, that's what
pounds.
I'm saying. They also don't have great running backs. Like, that's the other thing, is they don't have like a big, like a perfect franchise running back. So they've almost like their hand has been forced a little bit. And you've seen that rear its head in terms of a weakness.
You have, and that's why they lost last year. I mean, they did not have a great running game. The Buffalo Bills did. And you have to be, like Josh Allen and the Bills were, you have to be near perfect to be able to be super successful in the playoffs playing that way. And so there's a ton of pressure on Josh Allen for him to be that guy, you know, throughout the playoffs. And it is a feast or famine approach. And again, they have Brian Daboll as the offensive coordinator. They have full reign and full, you know, go to, hey, this is our philosophy. This is the way that we're going to win, and this is how we're going to do it. And the same with Kansas City in their own different, unique way. Whereas I look at Tampa Bay, and to me, that is the way that, you know, stylistically, I think matches up pretty well to what the Seahawks want to be. We'll watch Green Bay the following week. I think stylistically, Tennessee the following week. Stylistically, that's what ultimately the Seahawks want to be. But Stacey, to your point, Tampa Bay built their roster in a very different way.
Well, yeah,
I think that's
they
ultimately
lost
what you're
for
pointing
10 years.
To. Right.
Well, that's
yeah,
what I was saying. Been... Like, in terms of replicable, like, I totally agree with you. Like, run pass balance, the kind of things that you value with a team, philosophy, replicable. Tampa Bay essentially was like not great, not exceptional for any extended period of time, for like 10 years, 10 plus years, basically from like 2007 to when they made the Super Bowl. Like, they had moments when they were good and moments when they were competitive, but they also racked up a ton of high round picks because they really weren't overall. Seattle hasn't had that. Like, Seattle hasn't had a shot at Vita Vea. Or was Mike Evans a first rounder, second rounder?
Like, oh, he was
first, yeah, he's first, a first rounder.
Round.
Yeah,
like,
he was
they
a
haven't
high
had
first
a
rounder.
Shot at a lot of those guys that Tampa Bay has.
But the thing is that you ideally it would be great if you did, right? It just theoretically, not the losing part, but to be able to have that draft positioning and to be able to build your roster that way. There's no question. But where the Seahawks are right now, what they have to try to replicate or what they have to try to emulate with some of these playoff teams is look at the difference of these playoff teams in the trenches. Skill-wise, when you look at this group, you look at your safeties, you look at your linebackers, you feel pretty good about where you stand there. Corner is obviously something this organization has to figure out and get the answers to. But from an offensive perspective, you know, skill-wise, you feel pretty darn good. Feel pretty darn good about your quarterback. You feel pretty darn good about, you know, your receiver duo that you have and the depth that you have at that position. If you bring back Gerald Everett next year, tight ends, you feel really good about what you have coupled with Colby Parkinson. And we'll have to see if they're able to bring back Will Dissly, but you feel good about that. The difference to me with these teams is in the trenches. What does your offensive line and your defensive lines look like? And that to me is what the highlight of this playoffs really shows to me. Is, yeah, you have special performances from Josh Allen and the Bills offense, who literally have the perfect offensive game, which is something that has never happened, particularly in the playoffs, and it was amazing to watch. It was unbelievable. I couldn't believe what my eyes were seeing. But when you look at everyone else, the Seattle Seahawks have the ability to be a championship team if they truly address their offensive and defensive lines going into this next year. That, to me, is the biggest difference. And when you watch this offensive explosion for the Seattle Seahawks, what was the difference? Offensive line started to play significantly better, which helped Rashad Penny bring out his talent and gain confidence. It made Russell Wilson gain his confidence and be a better quarterback. It also made him a better quarterback on third down, Stacey. They were second in the league in the final 2 weeks on third down. Russell Wilson was playing extremely good football in that area. So to me, as I watched over the weekend, the difference between the have and the have-not, Stacey, there's certainly things that you could point to, but to me, it was all about the trenches, and it showed up in a big way. I mean, that's why the top seeds typically dominated the lower seeds this weekend.
All right, this hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Advanced Hair Restoration. Also, you guys, happy MLK Jr. Day. Happy Martin Luther King Day to everyone. We know it's a holiday, and we appreciate you if you're tuned in right now for listening and just wanted to take a second to say that to everyone. Also, we're going to get to this very weird report about Russell Wilson in like 15 minutes. And then we've got some wild card controversies. I mostly can't wait to discuss those coming up at 10:45. Got everyone
Stacey,
fired up.
Stacey, you sound super excited to talk about this random Russell Wilson report here.
We have to talk about it. I'm mostly excited to get to complaining about Dallas. Like, that's what I can't wait to do. But that's coming up at 10:45. Right now, though, let's get to headline rewrites.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline Rewrites.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacey.
Headline number one, speaking of Russell Wilson, we got word this morning that he's going to be on tonight's Monday Night Manning cast during the Cardinals-Rams game. What's the real headline?
Speaking of that report, I'm getting a report now from Ian Rappaport. Hang on just one second. Yes, here it is. Ian Rappaport saying Russell Wilson will be on tonight's Manning cast. Did you guys hear this? Have you guys heard this anywhere? That's straight from the source. That's from Ian Rappaport.
According to many close sources.
Yeah. Wow.
Oh, okay. Close
sources.
All right. Well,
telling him that.
Thank you. Thank you for that update. I had not heard about it. So, man, thanks for Ian for that. I appreciate that. Thanks for bringing that to our attention, Stacey.
You got it. By the way, someone from the Mac and Jack's text line, the 425 says, it's so weird watching the show today instead of my typical day listening to it. Jake looks like he's a senior in high school, ready to call his brother's Little League baseball game. Stacey looking ready for a lunch date at REI.
With the vest.
I've been killed.
A senior in high school? I resent
it's
that.
It's because you can't grow a beard, Jake.
Oh, my God, that's Jake. True. I can't believe, by the way, it's that so we true. Did not mention your Jake-ism this morning.
Oh,
you know what? Let's get to it at 10:30. Let's get to it at 10:30 because it's much more relevant with that. But let's go ahead and get to the next headline. Here.
Headline Rewrites.
Headline number two, the Bills played an actual perfect game offensively, scoring a touchdown on every drive in their win over the Patriots. What's the real headline?
If Josh Allen can keep playing like this, there is not a team in the playoffs that can beat Buffalo. This is if this is a version, not even this good, a version of what the Bills can be, they're going to get their first Super Bowl win. It's going to happen. By the way, sidebar. The Super Bowl matchup I'm most heavily rooting for, Bills-Cardinals. Neither franchise has won before.
I mean, that was absolutely insane to watch what they did. I mean, I seriously, I couldn't believe it. I could not believe what they were doing. I mean, every single drive, it just kept scoring and scoring and scoring. And this is against a really good secondary with the New England Patriots. This is one of the best defenses in football going into the playoffs. And got absolutely smoked, got ran through. I mean, it was a sight to be seen. That is for sure. And you're right. If this offense can play at that level, man, they are going to be impossible to beat. Now, I don't expect them to have a perfect performance offensively, you know, throughout the playoffs. But the way that their defense plays, the way that they are able to, you know, be as stout as they are, and you give Josh Allen and this offensive group the ability to, you know, basically have their way with you. I mean, there's just too much. There's too much firepower on both sides of the ball to really be able to contend. And to me, the difference between the Bills and Kansas City is the fact that the Bills actually have a legitimate defense, and that to me is what makes that potential matchup really, really interesting. If it does indeed come down that way. But I mean, my goodness, they ran Josh Allen 308 yards through the air, and they had 174 yards on the ground. Just that was a massacre.
It's insane.
And they did it all in sub-zero temperatures.
Oh, did we mention?
How do you
I think
score?
It was the strength of Fitzmagic.
Well, yeah, we'll get to that into the timeline.
We'll get to it in the timeline, but I think that he had something to do with it. I really do.
All I want to know is how many people took Bart Scott's advice. That's all I want to know. Because clearly something was going on.
I'm adding this at 10:45 when I talk about the controversies. There's two. The third controversy I'm adding is, did Josh Allen take Viagra after all?
They played like they were a domed team.
That's what I'm saying.
But they were playing in sub-zero temperatures, moving the ball like that. It was just absurd.
Put your tin hat on.
It was insane.
Put your tin hat on.
Absolutely insane.
Headline Rewrites.
Headline number three, we've got another playoff game tonight.
All right.
A rare Monday nighter, Cliff Kingsbury's Cardinals face Matthew Stafford and the Rams. What's the real headline?
Also a rare meeting of a stoppable force and a movable object. Now, outside of the 49ers and Cowboys, this is the game I think we can all agree is most close to a toss-up, because both of these teams have great strengths, can look phenomenal, and both have critical flaws that come out at the worst time. I genuinely could not tell you. If I was a betting man, I'd say the Rams. They've got home field advantage, but that obviously didn't work for them against San Francisco. But they have some issues to iron out still. As good as they are and as talented as they are, and you could say the exact same thing about the Cardinals. So I don't know what to make of this one.
You absolutely could. That's what makes this such a fascinating game. And, you know, remember we were sitting there going, oh, I don't want an extra playoff game. Well, now we're like, heck yeah, Monday night, let's go. Super excited to watch this playoff game. And this is going to be a good one. And I ultimately believe that this is going to come down to Matthew Stafford. He is the one that I am watching in this game. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I should be saying that about Kyler Murray, because Kyler Murray, as we know, is the ultimate playmaker and can really, really, you know, take a game over when he is at his best. But I do think that the Rams are the better team here. And if Matthew Stafford can stay away from the turnovers, I believe the Rams win this one. And that's going to be the ultimate story for me, is if Matthew Stafford gets his first playoff win in the NFL with a superior roster, with a roster that has no excuses. There's nowhere to hide. You can't say, oh, you know, Matthew Stafford's stuck in Detroit. Feel bad for Matthew Stafford. Nope, that's not the case. You know, this year, it's definitely not the case going into these playoff games. So Matthew Stafford's certainly the name that I am watching.
I mean, but that's also something where the Arizona Cardinals have been pretty exceptional with forcing fumbles and then recovering them.
Yes. Yeah.
So it's like, if there is one weakness of Matthew Stafford, who's got a great arm, great timing, great chemistry with these wide receivers already in his first year in LA, and that's pretty exceptional, it's that in games where he does throw a bunch of turnovers, they've almost consistently lost those. Like, they can't overcome his biggest mistakes when they do happen. Really few teams could do that with their quarterback throwing, let's say, two picks. Arizona has been good at taking the ball away. So.
They have, and that is also another byproduct, though, of, you know, we talk about Josh Allen and we talk about Patrick Mahomes, and I think you can say the same thing about the Rams, is that when you have these offenses that are so heavily reliant on the passing game, it puts a lot of pressure on these quarterbacks to be darn near perfect to be able to pull it off, and that is the difference between, you know, what Josh Allen and what Patrick Mahomes have been able to do on a consistent basis. Matthew Stafford certainly has been great and has had great moments this season where he has just been brilliant, but he has had plenty of mistakes. And when you, Stacey, as an offense, there's no other answer. You have to continue to put the ball in his hands, even when he isn't playing at his best, because that's what your offense is. And that can be sometimes the problem as you go into it. And if I'm Pete Carroll and I'm looking at that, it's exactly the reason why you want a balanced attack.
All right, let's get back to that report from Ian Rappaport. What should Seahawks fans make of this, if anything? That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Don't forget, you can listen to us on the go or catch up with the show if you miss it. Subscribe to the Jake and Stacey podcast. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Please don't forget to rate and review if you do subscribe. A report surfaced this weekend about, Russell Wilson, and go figure, we're back into the same conversations we were having last offseason. This one, the latest from NFL Network's Ian Rappaport, who says that Russell Wilson wants to, quote, explore his options this offseason. Now, here's what makes this a little confusing. Number one, Russell Wilson is still under contract, Jake. So I'm not sure if anyone's going to be out here tampering, but I don't think you can go explore your options in the offseason. Like, I think it would be a problem if Russell Wilson, under contract with Seattle, was being approached by Denver or New Orleans saying, like, oh, here's what we could offer you here.
Right.
Last time I checked, you couldn't do that. But what should Seahawks fans make of this? Is this just random offseason chatter that's starting up all over again? Is there something to it? I can't tell either way.
No, there's nothing to this report. I can definitively say that there's nothing to this report. And certainly, I don't know the sources that Ian Rappaport was using, but it's no one anywhere close to Russell Wilson and his side of things. I mean, the truth is, I mean, in the article itself, you know, who everyone always points to, Mark Rogers is up to, you know, no good and always saying that, listening to Mike Salk and, you know, definitely out there pointing to Russell Wilson's camp leaking this. Ian Rappaport, in its own article, if you care to read it, says, Mark Rogers, who did not return several calls seeking comment. So the main person that is, you know, releasing information or who is the main person that typically is the source of a lot of these reports that are out there, Ian Rappaport never talked to. So from what I know from Russell Wilson, I mean, just honestly, he has been focused on, you know, just trying to have the best offseason he can so far. I mean, he's back in San Diego rehabbing, getting ready to go. You know, I talked to him, you know, about the situation and, you know, just look, this isn't true. So, you know, Russell's excited about what the offseason holds and what it can be. And you know, he's looking to have the best offseason of his life, just like he focuses and refocuses every year. And you know, he wants to win here in Seattle. That's always been his goal and his mission, and it still is. So I mean, you know, TBD on anything definitive, I guess, but in regards to a report like this from Rappaport, I was just kind of shocked to see him put out something like this and make it seem like it was very much coming from Russell's camp, when also very clearly in his own article he says that it's not coming from Mark Rogers, and that's the only person that is speaking on behalf of Russell Wilson.
Yeah, it's. I think that there are some reports that come out, like that one where Adam Schefter got the 14s from Mark Rogers, where you're like, A, Mark Rogers, Russell Wilson, what are you doing? And B, like, yeah, that's from the agent himself. Like, that's something. I think this is something I've seen it making the rounds. I've seen it all over the place. And I think the biggest thing I've seen are people, number one, saying Russell Wilson should say something. And two, I think just mostly frustration that Seahawks fans, once again, entering an offseason where it's like, can everyone just proceed forward like there isn't like some huge divorce, you know, on the horizon? Like,
wait, that's imminent?
Can it be, yeah, can it be like an offseason that doesn't include constant reports about whether or not your team is like destined for a divorce here? But yeah, I mean, I think this is something that didn't make a ton of sense to me, mostly because I don't know what exploring your options could look like when you're under contract.
Well, it doesn't make any sense because you can't, right? You, there's no such thing as exploring your options when you're clearly under contract. That's not how the NFL works. It's never how it's going to work. And unless there is just an outright trade that's being asked, and also then the Seahawks then comply with that request, there's no conversation. There's no conversation to be had here. And I know that from Russell Wilson's perspective, like I said before, down in San Diego, he's rehabbing, continuing to rehab. He's continuing to train. And his mindset is focused on having the best offseason he can, you know, to have the best year with the Seattle Seahawks. That he is very frustrated with how the season ended this year, and is excited about what it can be going, you know, forward, as everybody was, you know, the last two games of the season. So that's what I can tell you from the actual source itself, and from the actual sources of Russell Wilson and Mark Rogers. And I think that's more definitive than what Ian Rappaport put out there.
Yeah. All right. Well, so I think we've decided. Like, I think it's been ruled. It's the last time we'll get to this story, because I know that people are really, really frustrated about it. And I know that people mostly just hate hearing it. But I do think that, you know, having a unique insight into, you know, Russell Wilson's decision making via the, you know, the insight that we get from Jake, I wanted to be sure to tap into and explore this morning, just so we can, you know, I don't know. Until we hear more, or until there's something from Russell Wilson's agent, or until that there's something from the team, like, I'm not really reading into it. It feels like just off-season chatter, because we're in the off-season and that gets the clicks.
Well, it does, and that's what's so weird about this wild card, you know, doing it now. Like, what do you get out of it doing now? Everybody's focused on the playoffs. I mean, there's very little that you can gain from doing something like this. And if it ever came to that point, I mean, you saw soft pedaling that happened last year. I don't think that if it ever came down to that, that there would be soft pedaling moving forward. I think it's pretty definitive, you know, one way or another. I think that that's the point that you're at. And so seeing something like this makes no sense. There's nothing to gain from it one way or the other. But one report that did come out, Stacey, that I thought was very just informative. It was good to hear when you talk about clarity and when I talked about it on Friday. Well, lo and behold, here you have it from Chris Mortensen at Mort Report tweeted out, yes, Seahawks coach Pete Carroll and GM John Schneider met Thursday with owner Jody Allen, but a well-placed source said it was usual end-of-season review, a look ahead, and no job security talk. All systems are go with Carroll, Schneider, and QB Russell Wilson, source said. So, Wilson has 2 years left on his contract. He's expressed desire to finish in Seattle. He has no trade clause, but of course his name will be in play for everyone to discuss because that's the new frontier, real or not. That was the report from the report from Chris Mortensen, and that is somebody that he is well sourced and well trusted. And I firmly, you know, thought that that was a very good positive sign from a report that I think people can hold on to when it comes to the state of the Seahawks right now. And I know a lot of people might have thought, well, we knew that about Pete, we knew that about John, but there was a lot of chatter going on behind the scenes about what could happen and what could be in play here with that meeting with Jody Allen. So it's great to hear and have that clarity that I was hoping for, on Friday, Stacey, and we got that Sunday.
Oh my God, before I get to the wild card controversies, I completely forgot to mention the new Jake-ism that happened, which is we were talking about whether or not you should ever say something, like whether or not if a report comes out about you, if you should ever say something. And Curtis, you talked about, you know, sometimes it's really tough to get the toothpaste back in the tube.
Uh-huh, that's exactly what I said.
And Jake said, you know, like Curtis said, sometimes it's tough to get the tube back in the bottle. So
close.
Well,
it was so close.
Close.
But so far. And so we got a new one here. It's, you know,
I wasn't paying attention, okay?
Sure, Jake.
When I was writing the email, okay, I was in the middle of trying to get Bodie a bottle.
You got it, buddy.
While he was up and doing his morning routine.
Right,
so,
right.
You know, just like, please have some forgiveness here. It wasn't a clear Jake-ism.
The added layer to this one is that it was written out. This was not a spoken Jake-ism.
The added layer
this was in print on an email
Jake
chain.
Jake responding
that we're on.
To an email from Curtis saying, yeah, as, Curtis just said, verbatim.
It's incredible.
God, I can't escape it. No, you can't, and it's so beautiful. It's a wonderful thing. All right. Let's get to these two controversies from Wild Card Weekend, what people can't stop talking about this morning. That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Wild Card controversies from over the weekend. There are two plays in particular, both having to do with referees. Go figure. That people are upset about. So let's go ahead and cover what those two are. Now, the first is from the Bengals-Raiders game, an early game, Saturday wild card game, when a erroneous whistle sounded clearly from a ref while the ball was in the air during a Joe Burrow touchdown. I'm going to guess that the ref maybe thought Burrow stepped out of bounds, and then blew the whistle, signaling a dead ball. But then he was never out of bounds, and the ball was caught in bounds, and so it's a touchdown, technically. Now, that play should have been dead. Like, that should have been a dead ball play. The whistle is blown while the ball is in the air. That touchdown shouldn't have counted. Was Cincinnati the better team? I don't know. It was, like, a tight game. I'm glad Cincinnati advanced. It was a great play. But I'm sorry, Jake. Refs pretending that ball wasn't in the air when the whistle sounded, when there is literal video evidence, is wild. Like, just come out and say, like, you know what? Yeah, that should have been a dead ball.
Yeah, it was bad. It was really bad when it comes down to it. It was bad that the whistle was even blown to begin with. That's what you have replay for in that moment. And then the other side of it is, yeah, according to the rule of the law, is that if a erroneous whistle is blown, that play is dead. It's over, and you have to, you know, replay the down. And that in the playoffs, in particular. When this happens in the playoffs, you can't just brush over it and say, ah, no, it's either deny that it happened or say, well, what can you do? Well, what you can do is get it right. It's the playoffs. What are we talking about here? And I was just very surprised to see how it was handled, how, you know, from maybe the refs on the field didn't realize it. Maybe the ref that blew his whistle just stayed quiet and didn't say anything at all to everybody else. I don't know what happened.
Imagine being the guy that blew his whistle and you're just, don't say anything.
Yeah, like,
nothing.
I don't know.
It came from a fan behind me. How'd they get that in here?
That's right. I mean, I just don't understand how that goes without, without notice from the other refs on the field or the referee who blew the whistle didn't step up and speak up and say, I blew the whistle and we need to, you know, run the playback. I just think that it's completely unfair. And yeah, Bengals fans would say, well, it's unfair that you would take our touchdown away. But at the same time, it's unfair to Raiders players who maybe heard a whistle and stopped playing. Right. So overall, it's just really unfortunate that you have this level of a controversy with a game that, other than that, was a really enjoyable game watching Cincinnati and the Raiders and came all the way down to the wire.
Now, there is a pool report from this game. That's obviously where, like, a member of the press will be able to ask, questions of the, of officiating to see what happened. Officials said, there was just an inadvertent erroneous whistle and, we looked over the play, everything's in bounds and, in rule 15, an erroneous whistle is not a reviewable play. So refs still, NFL still very much being like, yeah, we don't know what you're talking about. That's, we can't review that. It is what it is.
Well, right. You can't review it, but you can get it right in the moment. The ref blew the whistle. He knew he blew the whistle. How do you not fix that?
I know. From the 206, the rule makes no sense because a ref decided to blow a whistle when the player was obviously in bounds. Yeah, I mean, that is the rule, technically, because the idea being when players hear a whistle, they'll stop playing because the play is dead. If you are a Raiders fan, you woke up today and yesterday after that game, honestly, and you were saying, oh, defensive backs were reacting to the sound of the whistle and they could have made a play on the ball. Honestly,
yes.
It was a great play. I don't know if that could have happened. Even if you saw defensive back slowing down, like, I think that's a touchdown no matter what. But it doesn't matter. It would have been blown dead. Let's get to the one everyone's actually talking about, though, Jake. And that was at the end of the 49ers-Dallas game when, with 14 seconds remaining, Dak Prescott's quarterback draw, 17 yards down the middle, slides, gets up, hands the ball to a center. A bunch of bumbling around. Center gives the ball to the ref. The ref goes to place it and spot the ball, and then time's up. And that's the end. Now, Kellen Moore, Mike McCarthy,
finish.
Cowboys clearly not happy with this. Cowboys fans throwing bottles and debris onto the field. Dak Prescott in his postgame press conference saying basically like, yeah, more power to him. Good for them. We weren't happy about it either. However, Jake, this one to me is the Cincinnati Raiders one was like, yeah, that play should have been dead, even if I liked the Bengals and wanted them to advance. This one is like a maybe don't do a quarterback draw with 14 seconds remaining and no timeout. I don't know. That's just me.
Yeah.
I am but a simple person.
Yeah, I would put more onus on the Dallas Cowboys than blaming it on the ref. I mean, the thing is also is that if that's what you're going to do, then set the marker. How far do you need to get? How far do you want to get down the field in order for you to feel like that was a positive play? Because you're playing with fire at that point, right? Quarterback sneak with that little time left, no timeouts. The only way that you have the ability to stop the clock is to clock it. And if it was me, setting up that play and talking through it, get the first down, get down. Get the first down, get down. Take the positive yards and don't try to get any more. Just get yourself into a better position because you're setting yourself up for a last second, heroic play anyway, Stacey. The difference between the 30 and the 20 is not all that drastic. okay? And it is not worth fighting for the extra 7 yards at that point to waste the clock. And then the other mistake that Dak Prescott made was handing the ball to the center. The center isn't the one that needs to set the ball. It's the referee. And that is something that when I was in Seattle with Pete Carroll, this is something that Pete Carroll stressed every single day. Literally, Stacey, in the offseason, practice 2-minute drill every single walkthrough. And the emphasis for everyone, if you catch the ball, run the ball, you get sacked, whatever the case is, you find the referee and you hand him the ball. Not the outside referees, the line judge, and you hand him the ball. Give him the ball so that he can set it and that there's no errors. And because Dak didn't do that, now the referee has to run through the offensive line. They didn't make any room for him. He has to bumble through it and then has to reset the ball, and that's why they're not able to set the clock. Don't be mad at the refs. Be mad at yourself if you're Dallas.
All right. Well, let's go back to a few of those plays. We've got 5 big plays to explore from Wild Card Weekend. Obviously, we're going to look back and continue to find out what Seattle can learn, how they can move forward, and hopefully get back into the playoffs next year. But what we learned from the weekend, the biggest plays of the weekend, 4 down territory, it's all coming your way next.